This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Wolf's hand was there first, one arm brushing against her side. Her breath caught, and she was frozen, staring wide-eyed into his face, his emerald eyes hollow as his fingers lifted the back of her sweatshirt and pulled out the gun. He was going to kill them. He was going to protect her. Flipping the gun around so that he gripped the barrel, Wolf held it out to one of her captors. When his severity melted, hinting at something like regret, Scarlet set her jaw. A loyal soldier to the Order of the Pack? She saw the pain in his gulp. No, Lunar Special Operative. The room spun. Lunar. He was Lunar. He worked for them. He worked for the Queen. Scarlet turned her head away and forced her legs to be strong, refusing to be carried away like a child as they guided her to another set of stairs, stairs that led down to the opera house's sublevels. She refused to give them the pleasure of a struggle. The thaumaturge's voice followed behind her, all benevolence. "You have my leave to rest until sunset, Alpha Kesley. I can see that your trials have wearied you." Chapter 28. Kai paced the length of his office from door to desk, desk to door. 2 days had passed since Lavanna had issued her ultimatum. Find the cyborg girl, or she would attack. Time was running out, and every hour filled Kai with growing dread. He hadn't slept for over 48 hours, with the exception of 5 press conferences in which he still had nothing new to report. He hadn't left his office in that time either. Still no sign of Lynn Cinder, no sign of Dr. Erlen, like they'd simply vanished. Gah! He pulled his hands back through his hair until his scalp stung. Lunars! The speaker on his desk hummed. Royal Android Nancy has requested entrance. Kai released his hair with a deflated groan. Nancy had been good to him the past few days, bringing vast amount of tea and saying nothing when she took the still full but now cold cups back out hours later. She encouraged him to eat and reminded him when a press conference was coming up, or that he'd neglected to return the Australian Governor General's comms. If it weren't for the title, Royal Android Nancy, he almost would have expected a human to walk through the doors every time she was summoned. He wondered if his father had felt the same way toward his android assistants, or maybe Kai was just delirious. Shooing away the unhelpful thoughts, he rounded to the back of his desk. "Yes, enter." The door opened, and Nancy's treads rolled across the carpet. She was not carrying the tray of snacks he'd expected. "Your Majesty, a woman by the name of Lynn Adry and her daughter, Lynn Pearl, have requested an immediate appointment. Lynn Ji says she has important information on the Lunar fugitive. I encouraged her to contact Chairman Wei, but she insisted she speak with you directly. I scanned her ID, and she appears to be who she claims. I wasn't sure if I should turn her away." "That's fine. Thank you, Nancy. Send her in." Nancy rolled back out. Kai glanced down at his shirt and buttoned the collar, but determined there was nothing he could do about the wrinkles. A moment later, 2 strangers entered his office. The first was a middle-aged woman with hair just beginning to gray, and the other was a teenage girl with thick hair that hung straight down her back. Kai frowned as the 2 bowed deeply before him, and it wasn't until the girl attempted a shy grin that he felt like an idiot for his exhaustion-muddled brain not picking up on their names when Nancy had announced them. Lynn Adry, Lynn Pearl. They were not entirely strangers. He'd seen the girl twice before, once at Cinder's booth at the market, and then again at the ball. This was Cinder's stepsister. And the woman. The woman. His blood curdled with the memory of her, made worse by the almost bashful, girlish look she was giving him now. He had seen her at the ball, too. when she'd been about to strike Cinder for daring to enter in the first place. "Your Majesty," said Nancy, returning behind them, "may I introduce Lynn Adrigi and her daughter, Lynn Pearl May?" They each bowed again. "Yes, hello," said Kai. "You are..." "I was the legal guardian of Lynn Cinder," said Adri. "Please forgive the intrusion, Your Imperial Majesty. I understand you are quite busy." He cleared his throat, wishing now he'd left the collar alone. It was already strangling him. "Please sit down," he said, gesturing to the sitting area around the holographic fire. "That will be all, Nancy. Thank you." Kai moved to claim the chair, determined not to sit beside either of the women. They, in turn, perched straight back on the sofa so as not to crumple the bows on their kimono-style dresses, and folded their hands demurely atop their laps. The resemblance between the two was remarkable, and of course nothing at all like Cinder, whose skin had always been sun-darkened, whose hair was straighter and finer, and who had carried an understated confidence with her, even when she was shy and stammering. Kai caught himself before he could smile at the memory of Cinder, shy and stammering. "I'm afraid we were not formally introduced when our paths crossed at the ball last week, Lin Ji." "Oh, Your Imperial Majesty is too kind. Adri, please. Truth be told, I am attempting to distance myself from the ward who now carries my husband's name, and you will, I am sure, remember my lovely daughter." He turned his attention to Pearl. "Yes, we met at the market. You had some packages you wished Cinder to store for you." He was glad the girl flushed, and he hoped she was remembering how rude she'd been that day. "We also met at the ball, Your Majesty," said Pearl. "We discussed my poor sister, my real sister, who recently fell ill and passed away from the same disease that claimed your illustrious father. Yes, I recall. My condolences on your loss." He waited for the expected return of sympathy, but it did not come. The mother was too busy examining the office's lacquered woodwork. The daughter was too busy examining Kai with faux timidity. He tapped his fingers against the chair's arm. "My android tells me you have information to impart regarding Lynn Cinder." "Yes, Your Majesty." Adri drew her attention back to him. "Thank you for seeing us on such short notice, but I do have some information that I think could be helpful in your search for my ward. As a concerned citizen, I, of course, want to do anything I can to assist with the search and ensure she is apprehended before she can do further damage." "Of course you do. But forgive me, Lin Ji, I was under the impression you'd already been contacted and questioned by the authorities as part of the investigation." "Oh, yes, we both spoke at length with some very nice men," said Adri. "But since then, something new has come to my attention." Kai settled his elbows on his knees. "Your Majesty, I trust you are familiar with the recorded footage from the quarantines about 2 weeks ago in which a girl attacked two medroids?" He nodded. "Of course. The girl who spoke to Chang Sunto, the boy who recovered from the plague. Well, at that time I was very distracted, having just lost my youngest daughter. But since then, I've taken a closer look at the video, and I'm convinced that the girl is Cinder." Kai's brow drew together, already replaying the video in his mind. The girl was never clearly seen. The recording was grainy and shaky and only showed glimpses of her back. "Really?" he mused, trying not to sound speculative. "What makes you think that?" "It's difficult to tell on the video itself, and I would not know for sure, except I was having Cinder's ID tracked that day, and she'd been behaving suspiciously for some time. I know she was near the quarantines that day. Before, I thought she was merely attempting to run away from her household duties, but now see that the little aberration had a much more sinister motive in mind. His eyebrows arose. Aberration? Adri's cheeks tinted pink. Even that is too kind for her, Your Majesty. Are you aware that she can't even cry? Kai sat back. After a moment, he found that, rather than being disgusted, as Adri clearly expected, he was left merely curious. Really? Is that normal for cyborgs? I wouldn't know, Your Majesty. She is the first and hopefully the last cyborg I'll ever have the misfortune of knowing. I can't understand why we make cyborgs in the first place. They're dangerous, proud creatures, parading around like they think they're better than everyone else, like they deserve special treatment for their eccentricities. They're nothing but a drain on our hard-working society. Collar beginning to itch, Kai cleared his throat. I see. You said something earlier about evidence that Cinder had been near the quarantines and done something sinister? Yes, Your Majesty. If you'd be so kind as to refer to my ID page, you'll see I've uploaded a video that is rather incriminating. Kai unlatched his port screen from his belt, thinking about the footage from the quarantines as he searched for Adri's page. The video was at the top, a low-quality image tagged with the symbol of the Commonwealth's law enforcement androids. What is this? When Cinder wouldn't respond to my comms that day, and I was sure she was fleeing the country, I enacted my right to have her forcibly retrieved. This is the footage from when they found her. Holding his breath, Kai played the video. It was shot from a hover car, peering down on a dusty street surrounded by abandoned warehouses. And there was Cinder, panting and angry. She raised a clenched fist toward the android. I didn't steal it. It belongs to her family, not to you or anyone else. The camera shook as the hover landed and the android approached her. Scowling, Cinder took a half step back. I haven't done anything wrong. That medroid was attacking me. It was self-defense. Kai watched, shoulders tense, as the android rambled on in its monotone voice about the rights of her legal guardian and the Cyborg Protection Act, until finally Cinder assented to come with them, and the video ended. It took a mere 4 seconds for Kai to pull up the footage of the girl attacking the quarantine medroid, and his grip tightened around the device as he fit the puzzle pieces together. He found himself feeling like a fool for the 100th time that week. It made sense that it was Cinder. Of course it was Cinder. He had given the antidote just hours before to Dr. Erlen, right in front of her. Erlen must have passed it to her, and she then gave it to Chang Santo. And though the cameras had never got a good shot of her, the hasty ponytail and baggy cargo pants matched perfectly. Gulping, he shut off the video and reattached the port to his belt. What was she talking about that she didn't steal? What belongs to her family? Adri set her mouth in a firm line, deep wrinkles cutting into her upper lip. Something that did indeed belong with her family, with those who would have given proper respect to the deceased. And Cinder mutilated that which was once most precious to me in order to get it. She what? I believe she stole my daughter's ID chip, not minutes after her death. Adri placed a hand on the swath of silk over her abdomen. It churns my stomach to think of, but I know I should have expected it. Cinder was always jealous of both my girls, and so spiteful. Although I could not have imagined her sinking to such a low before, now that I know her true nature, I cannot be surprised by it. She deserves to be found and punished for what she's done. Kai drew back from the venom in her voice and couldn't connect her accusations to his own memories of Cinder. He thought of their paths crossing in the elevator, of her eyes filling with sadness as she spoke of her dying sister, how she'd ask if Kai would save a dance for her in case she miraculously survived. Or was every memory he had of Cinder truly nothing more than a lunar trick? What did he know about her, really? Are you sure? The reports claim that the weapon used against the androids was a scalpel, and it all happened just moments after I received the comm telling me that my daughter, her jaw trembled, her knuckles whitening in her lap, and I can just see her trying to take Peony's identity in that inhuman head of hers. She grimaced. It chills me to think, but it is precisely something she would have done. And you think she could still have the ID chip with her? That, Your Majesty, I cannot say, but it is a possibility. With a nod, Kai stood. Adri and Pearl gawked up at him, mute before bolting to their own feet. Thank you for bringing this to my attention, Lin Ji. I'll have a tracker set up for the ID immediately. If she has the chip, we will find her. Even as he spoke, he found himself pleading to the stars that Lin Adri was wrong, that Cinder had not taken the ID chip. But that was a stupid wish, an immature wish. He had to find her, and he only had one more day to do it. He had no desire to find out what Lavanna would do if he failed. Thank you, Your Majesty. I only want to know that my daughter's memory won't be tarnished because I was once so generous as to allow that awful girl into my family. Thank you, he started, not sure what he was thanking her for, but it seemed the right thing to say. If we have any further questions, I'll have someone contact you. Yes, of course, Your Majesty, Adre said with a low bow. I only wish to do well by my country and see this horrid girl brought to justice. Kai lifted his head. You do realize that once she's found, Queen Lavanna intends to have her executed, don't you? Adri folded her hands prettily before her. I am sure the law is there for a reason, Your Majesty. Pursing his lips, Kai stepped away from the sitting area and led them toward the door. After two more bows apiece, Pearl glided out of the room with lashes fluttering at Kai until her neck could no longer crane toward him, but Adri paused in the doorway, bowed one more time. It was such an honor, Your Majesty, he smiled tautly back. I do wonder, not that it matters one little bit, but only as a matter of curiosity, should this lead to any discoveries in the investigation? Might I be able to expect any sort of reward for my assistance? Chapter 29. Scarlet's prison cell had begun life as a dressing room. The vague outlines of mirrors and vanities were burned into the walls, and the strips of light bulbs that had surrounded them had been reduced to empty sockets. The carpet had been pulled up, revealing cold stone beneath, and the solid oak door had been taken off its hinges and left abandoned in the corner, replaced instead with welded iron bars and an ID-sensitive lock. Scarlet's fury had kept her pacing and storming about the room, kicking the walls and growling at the bars, for all night and most of the day. At least it seemed like nearly a full day had passed. It seemed like months had passed. But being trapped in the opera house's sub-level meant she had no indication of time other than the two meals that had been brought to her. The soldier who had made the delivery said nothing when she asked how long they were going to keep her there or demanded to see her grandmother immediately, only smirked at her through the bars in a way that made her skin crawl. She had finally collapsed on the blanketless mattress. Physically exhausted, she glared at the ceiling, hating herself, hating these men that kept her prisoner, hating Wolf. She gnashed her teeth and dug her fingernails into the worn, broken mattress. Alpha Kesley, if she ever saw him again, she would scratch his eyes out. She would throttle him until his lips turned blue. She would finally wore yourself out? She jerked upward. One of the men who had brought her to the cell stood on the other side, Rafe or Troya. She didn't know which. "I'm not hungry," she spat. He sneered. Every last one of them seemed to carry that same humorless smile, like it had been bred into them. "I'm not offering food," he said, and swiped his wrist past the scanner. Grasping the bars, he lugged the door open. "I'm taking you to see your precious grandmare." Scarlet scrambled off the mattress, all exhaustion flooding away. "Really? Those are my orders. Am I going to have to bind you, or do you intend to come willingly?" "I'll come. Just take me to her." His gaze dipped over her, evidently determining she didn't pose a threat. He stepped back and gestured toward the long, dim corridor. "Then after you." As soon as she stepped into the hallway, he grasped her wrist and lowered his face so that his breath steamed against her neck. "Do anything stupid, and I'll take my displeasure out on the old hag. Do you understand?" she shuddered. Without waiting for a response, he released her and nudged her between her shoulder blades, prodding her down the hallway. Her heart raced. She was near delirium with fatigue and the promise of seeing her grandmother, but it didn't keep her from scoping out her prison. Half a dozen barred doorways lined this basement corridor, all dark. The man urged her around a corner, up a thin stairwell, through a doorway. They were backstage. Dusty old props filled the rafters, and black curtains hung like phantoms in the darkness. The only light came from runners along the aisles in the audience, and Scarlet had to squint as the soldier led her out onto the stage, then down the steps into the empty audience. An entire section of seats had been removed, leaving holes where they'd once been bolted to the sloped floor. Another group of soldiers was standing there, in the shadows, like they had been having a jovial conversation before Scarlet and her captor had interrupted them. Scarlet kept her eyes firmly glued to the end of the aisle. She didn't think any of them were Wolf, but she didn't want to know if she was wrong. They reached the back of the theater, and Scarlet pushed open one of the huge doors. They were on a balcony overlooking the lobby and the grand staircase. Still no sunlight came through the hole in the ceiling. Clearly she'd missed the whole day. Her captor grabbed her elbow, pulling her away from the stairs, past more haunting statues of cherubs and angels. She yanked her arm from his grip and tried to commit their journey to memory, creating a blueprint of the opera house in her mind. But it was difficult when she knew that she was going to see her grandmother, finally. The thought of being held by these monsters for nearly 3 long weeks curdled her stomach. He guided her up a staircase to the first balcony and continued to the second. Closed doors led back into the theater, to the higher tiers of seats, but the soldier bypassed them and moved to another hallway. Finally, he stopped before a closed door, grasped the handle, and shoved it open. They had reached one of the private balconies that overlooked the stage, holding only 4 red velvet chairs in 2 rows. Her grandma was sitting alone in the front row, her thick gray braid dangling over the back of the seat. The tears Scarlet had been fighting for so long came at her in a rush. "Grandmère!" Her grandma started, but Scarlet was already barreling toward her. She collapsed to her knees in the space between the chairs and the railing and draped herself over her grandma's lap, crying into her jeans, the same dirt-covered jeans she'd always gardened in. The familiar aroma of dirt and hay peeled up from the fabric, making Scarlet cry harder. "Scarlet, what are you doing here?" her grandma asked, setting her hands down on Scarlet's back. She sounded stern and angry, but not unkind. "Stop it! You're making a fool of yourself." She pulled Scarlet off her lap. "There, there, calm down. What are you doing here?" Scarlet sat back on her heels and stared bleary-eyed into her grandma's face. Bloodshot eyes belied her exhaustion, no matter how her jaw was set. She was on the verge of crying, too, but hadn't yet succumbed to the tears. Scarlet took her hands, squeezing them. Her grandmother's hands were soft, as if 3 weeks away from the farm had rubbed away years of calluses. "I came for you," she said. "After Dad told me what happened, what they were doing to you, I had to come to find you. Are you all right? Are you hurt?"
"I'm fine. I'm fine." She rubbed her thumbs over Scarlet's knuckles. "But I don't like seeing you here. You shouldn't have come. These men, you shouldn't be here. It's dangerous."
"I'm going to get us both out of here. I promise. Stars, I missed you so much."
Sobbing, she pressed her forehead to their entwined fingers, ignoring the hot tears that dripped off her jaw.
"I found you, Grandmère. I found you."
Slipping one hand out of Scarlet's grip, her grandma brushed a cluster of messy curls off Scarlet's brow.
"I knew you would. I knew you would come. Here, sit down next to me."
Stifling the tears, Scarlet pulled herself off her grandma's lap. A tray sat on the seat beside her grandma, holding a cup of tea, half a baguette, and a small bowl of red grapes that seemed untouched. Her grandma took the tray and held it out to the soldier in the doorway. His lips curled, but he took the tray and left, letting the door shut behind them. Scarlet's heart expanded. She did not hear a lock being put on the door. They were alone.
"Sit here, Scarlet. I missed you so much, but I'm so angry with you. You shouldn't have come. It's too dangerous, but now that you're here, oh, darling, you're exhausted. Grandmère, don't they monitor you? Aren't they afraid you'll escape?"
The old woman's face softened, and she pet the empty seat.
"Of course they monitor me. We are never truly alone here."
Scarlet considered the wall that separated them from the next private balcony, covered in flaking red wallpaper. Perhaps someone was there now, listening to them, or the group of soldiers she seen down in the first floor audience. If their senses were nearly as attuned as Wolf, they could probably hear them even from down there. Ignoring the urge to scream obscenities across the void, she lifted herself into the chair and reached for her grandma's hair again, holding them tight. Soft as they may have become, they were also deathly cold.
"You sure you're all right? They haven't hurt you?"
Her grandma smiled wearily.
"They haven't hurt me. Not yet. Although I don't know what they have planned, and I don't trust them a hair. Not after what they did to Luke, and they've mentioned you. I was terrified they would go after you too, darling. I wish you hadn't come. I should have been more prepared for this. I should have known this would happen."
"But what do they want?" Her grandma dragged her attention down to the dark stage. "They want information that I can't give them, though I would in a heartbeat if I could. I would have weeks ago. Anything to come home to you. Anything to keep you safe."
"Information about what?"
Her grandma took in a slow breath. "They want to know about Princess Selene." Scarlet's pulse skipped.
"Is it true, then? Do you really know something about her?"
Her grandma's eyebrows jumped upward. "Have they told you why, then? Why they suspect me?" She nodded, feeling guilty for knowing the secret her grandma had so long harbored.
"They told me about Logan Tanner, how they think he brought Selene to Earth, and how he may have sought out your help. They told me they think he's my grandfather."
The wrinkles on her grandma's forehead deepened, and she cast a concerned look at the wall behind Scarlet toward the other balcony before drawing her attention back.
"Scarlet, my love."
Her expression was gentle, but she didn't continue. Scarlet gulped, wondering if, after all these years, her grandma couldn't stand to dig up the past, the romance that had been so brief but had been clinging to her for so long. Did she even know that Logan Tanner was dead?
"Grandmère, I remember the man that came to the house, the man from the Eastern Commonwealth."
Her grandma tilted her head up, patient.
"I thought he was coming to take me away, but he wasn't, was he? You two were talking about the princess."
"Very good, Scarlet dear.
Why don't you just tell them his name? You must remember what it was, and then they could go to him. Won't he know where the princess is?
They no longer want to know about the princess. She bit down on her lip. Frustration welled up inside her. She was shaking.
Then why don't they let us go?
Her grandma squeezed Scarlet's fingers. Years of pulling weeds and chopping vegetables had made them strong, despite their age. They can't control me, Scarlet. She scrutinized her grandma's lined face.
What do you mean?
They're lunar. The Thaumaturge, he has the lunar gift, but it doesn't work on me. That's why they're keeping me here. They want to know why. Scarlet grasped for figments in her mind, all those bits and pieces she learned about lunars, impossible ever to tell which were true and which were exaggerated tales. It was believed that their queen ruled through mind control and that her thaumaturges were almost as strong as she was, that they could manipulate people's thoughts and emotions, that they could even control people's bodies if they chose, like puppets on strings. Scarlet gulped.
Are there a lot of people who can't be controlled?
Very few. Some lunars are born that way. They call them shells, but they've never known of an earthen woman who could resist before. I'm the first.
How? Is it genetic?
She hesitated.
Can I be controlled?
Oh, yes, dear. Whatever makes me like this, you do not have it. They'll use that against us, mark my words. I imagine they'll want to experiment on us both as they attempt to find out where this abnormality comes from, whether or not they should be worried about other Earthens being able to resist them as well. In the darkness, her grandmother's jaw hardened. It must not be hereditary. Your father was weak also. Scarlet was lost in warm brown eyes that had always been soothing, and yet struck her as harsh now in the darkness of the theater. Something gnawed at the back of her thoughts, the faintest suspicion. Her father was weak. Weak for women, weak for booze, a weak father, a weak man. But her grandmother had never suggested she could think the same as Scarlet. You'll be fine, she always said, after a skinned knee, after a broken arm, after her first youthful heartbreak. You'll be fine because you're strong, like me. Heart thumping, Scarlet lowered her gaze to their intertwined fingers, her grandmother's very wrinkled, very frail, very soft hands, her chest constricted. Lunars could manipulate people's thoughts and emotions, manipulate the way they experience the very world around them. Gulping, Scarlet pulled away. Her grandma's fingers clenched in a brief effort to restrict her, but then let go. Scarlet staggered out of her seat and backed against the rail, staring at her grandmother, the familiar unkempt hair in its always crooked braid, the familiar eyes growing colder as they peered up at her, growing wider. She blinked rapidly against the hallucination, and her grandmother's hands grew larger. Repulsion ripped through Scarlet. She gripped the railing to hold herself steady.
Who are you?
The door at the back of the balcony opened, but instead of her guard, Scarlet saw the thaumaturge's silhouette in the hallway. Very well, Omega. We have learned as much as we can from her. Scarlet faced her grandmother again. A startled cry was wrenched out of her. Her grandmother was gone, replaced by Wolf's brother. Omega Ran Kesley sat staring up at her, perfectly at ease. He wore the same shirt she'd seen him in last, wrinkled and flecked with dried mud.
Hello, dear. How nice to see you again.
Scarlet glared up at the thaumaturge. She could make out the whites of his eyes, the draping of his fancy tunic.
Where is she?
She is alive for now, and unfortunately remains a mystery. He squinted at Scarlet. Her mind remains impenetrable, but whatever her secret is, she has not passed it on to her son or her grandchild. I would think if it was a mental trick she were using, she would have at least tried to teach it to you. if not to that pathetic drunkard. And yet, if it is genetic, could it be a random trait? Or is there a shell in your ancestry? He touched a finger to his lips, analyzing Scarlet like a frog he was about to dissect. Perhaps you won't be entirely useless, though. I wonder how lubricated the old lady's tongue would become if she were to watch as you hammered needles into your own flesh. Fury clawed up her throat, and Scarlet hurled herself at him with a ragged cry, nails scratching at his face. She froze with her fingertips millimeters from his eye sockets. The fury drained away all at once, and she collapsed sobbing uncontrollably on the floor. Wondering what was wrong with her, she reached for her hatred again, but it slipped continuously from her mind, like trying to hold on to an eel. The harder she tried, the faster and harder the tears came, choking her, blinding her, all her anger dissolving into hopelessness and misery, her head filled with self-loathing. She was useless, weak, and stupid, and insignificant. She folded in on herself, her cries nearly drowning out the thaumaturge's unimpressed chuckle above her. How unfortunate your grandmother hasn't been so easy to manipulate. It would make this all so much simpler. Her mind hushed, the destructive words slipping back to a far, quiet corner of her thoughts, and the tears faded away with them, like turning a faucet on and off, like toying with a puppet. Scarlet lay crumpled on the floor, gasping. She swiped the mucus from her face. Digging her hands into the carpet, she forced her body to stop trembling and pushed herself up, using the door jamb for support. The thaumaturge's face twisted in that sickeningly charming way he had. "I'll have you escorted back to your quarters," he said, his tone all syrupy kindness. "Thank you most humbly for your cooperation." Chapter 30. Alpha Zev Kesley's hard-soled boots clipped harsh against the marble floor as he marched through the lobby, ignoring a handful of soldiers that nodded to him in respect, or perhaps fear, perhaps even curiosity at this officer who had spent weeks out in the midst of humans pretending to be one of them. He tried not to think of it. Being back at the headquarters felt like he'd woken from a dream. A dream that had once sounded like a nightmare, but not quite so anymore. He had woken up to reality much darker. He had remembered who he really was, what he really was. He reached the Lunar Rotunda, an ironic name that had pleased Master Jael greatly. He passed a mirror, pocked and darkened with age, almost not recognizing his reflection with his clean uniform and his hair combed neatly back. He snatched his gaze away. He smelled his brother as soon as he stepped into the library, and the hairs on his neck prickled. His pace faltered briefly as he made his way through the wood-paneled gallery and into the thaumaturge's private office. It had once been suited for royalty, a room for important high-society earthens to muse over the philosophical works of their ancestors. Display cases had once held priceless art, and bookshelves climbed two stories over his head. But the books were all gone now, rescued when the opera house had been taken over by the military, and a musty mildew scent had settled into the pores of the surrounding wood. Jael was seated at a wide desk, made of plastic and metal. It stood stark and dull against the extravagant decor. Bran was there, too, leaning against the wall of empty shelves. His brother smiled. Almost. Jael stood. "Alpha Kesley, thank you for coming at such short notice. I wanted you to be the first to know your brother had made it back safely." "I'm glad to see it," he said. "Hello, Ran. You were not looking too well last I saw you." "Likewise, Ziev. Your smell is much improved now that you've washed that human off." Every muscle tightened. "I hope there was no hard feelings about what happened in the forest." "None at all. You were playing a role. I understand you did what you had to. I should not have interfered." "No,"
You shouldn't have.
Rand hooked his thumbs over the wide sash around his waist.
I was worried about you, brother. You seemed almost, confused.
As you said, said Ziev, tilting his chin up, I was playing a role.
Yes, I should have never doubted you. Nonetheless, it is nice to see you return to your normal self, and that her bullet didn't go deeper.
I'd worried when I heard it go off that she may have hit your heart.
Rand grinned and turned back to Jael. If we are through here, I'd like to request permission to report to command.
Permission granted, said Jael, nodding as Rand saluted him, a fist to his chest.
Ziev caught a trace of scarlet scent on Rand as he brushed past, and his stomach squeezed. He urged his body to relax, bearing the animal instinct to tear out his brother's throat if he found out he'd laid one finger on her.
Rand lifted his head, expression darkening with a withheld secret.
Welcome home, brother.
Ziev remained expressionless as Rand continued on, waiting until he heard the door close at the other end of the gallery. He saluted the thaumaturge.
If there's nothing else.
Actually, there is something. A few things, actually, that I wish to discuss with you.
Jael sank back into his seat.
I received a comm from Her Majesty this morning. She asked that all packs stationed on Earth be prepared to attack tomorrow.
His jaw tightened.
Tomorrow? Her negotiations with the Eastern Commonwealth had not gone according to her desires, and she's quite finished offering compromises that they refuse to accept. She has offered a temporary continuation of peace should the cyborg girl, Lynn Cinder, be captured and handed over to her. But that has not happened. The attack will be centered in New Beijing, beginning at midnight their local time. We will attack at 1800 hours.
He tucked his hands into his wide crimson sleeves, their embroidered runes catching the light of self-sustained bulbs overhead.
I'm glad you returned in time to lead your pack. I want you positioned at the heart of a Paris attack. Will you accept this role?
Ziev clasped his hands behind his back, gripping his wrists until they ached.
I do not wish to question Her Majesty's motives, but I cannot understand why she is calling us away from our initial objective of finding the princess in order to teach a petty lesson to the Commonwealth. Why the change of priorities?
Jael leaned back, studying him.
It is not for you to question Her Majesty's priorities. However, I would hate for your mind to be clouded as we head into this important first battle. He shrugged. She is enraged with the escape of this Lynn Cinder. Though she may be a mere civilian, she was able to see beyond Her Majesty's glamour. And yet, she is not a shell.
Ziev couldn't keep the surprise from his face.
We are not sure yet if this unusual ability is due to something in her cyborg programming, or if her own lunar gift is exceptionally strong.
Stronger than Her Majesty's?
We do not know, Jael sighed. What is strange is that this ability of hers to resist our queen is not unlike Madame Benoit's ability to resist me. To find two non-shells with the same skill in such a short period of time is quite remarkable. Unfortunately, I am no closer to determining the reason for Michelle Benoit's ability. I tested her granddaughter an hour ago. She is as malleable as clay, so she has not inherited the trait. Behind his back, Alpha Kessley's fist clenched. Still, he couldn't shake her scent from the room, the faintest breath of her dancing beneath his nostrils. So Jael had questioned her, and Rand must have been there too. What had they done? Had she been hurt?
Alpha? Yes, he said quickly. I apologize. I thought I'd sensed the girl.
Jael started to laugh, a clear, amused laugh. It was Jael's peculiar warmth that Ziev had always mistrusted most. At least the other thaumaturges made no pretense of their ruthlessness, their haughty control of the lesser human citizens, and of their soldiers.
Your senses are remarkable, Alpha, without a doubt one of our best.
He tapped at his chair before pushing himself up. And your strength of character is unequaled. Your loyalty, your willingness to make sacrifices. I'm sure none of my other men would have gone to the length you did to obtain information from Miss Benoit, gone so far above the call of duty. That is precisely why I've chosen you to lead tomorrow's attack. J.L. paced to the row of shelves and ran a finger along them, dust collecting pale and gray against his skin. Ziev kept his expression blank, trying not to think what sacrifices J.L. thought he had made so far above the call of duty. But she was there in his mind, the pad of her thumb brushing against his scars, her arms wrapping around his neck. He swallowed hard. Every muscle drew tight against his bones in an effort to block out the memory. Now it is only a question of what to do with the girl. How frustrating that we finally find someone who might lead us closer to Princess Selene, just when we no longer have use of the information. Ziev's fingernails bit into his palms. Frustrating seemed laughable. If Her Majesty had changed her focus away from the princess 3 weeks ago, Scarlet and her grandmother never would have been involved in any of it, and he never would have known the difference. A clamp squeezed in on his chest. But I am optimistic, J.L. continued, speaking absently. We may still find a use for the girl, if we can persuade her grandmother to talk. The Madame tries to play at ignorance, but she knows why she is able to resist control. I'm sure of it. He fidgeted with the cuff of his sleeve. Which do you suppose will be more important to the lady, her grandmother's life or her own secrets? Ziev had no response. I guess we will see, said Jael, returning to his desk. At least now I'll have some power over her. His lips parted, showing perfect white teeth in a pleasant smile. You still have not answered my question, Alpha. Will you accept the role of leading our most important battle in the European Federation? Ziev's lungs burned. He wanted to ask more, to know more, about Scarlet, her grandmother, what Jael would do to her. But the questions would not be acceptable. His mission was complete. He no longer had any tie to Mademoiselle Benoit. He clasped a fist to his chest. Of course, Master J.L., it would be an honor. Good. Opening a drawer, J.L. pulled out a plain white box and slid it across the desk. On that, we just received this shipment of ID chips from the Paris quarantines. I hope it won't be too out of your way to take them down for wiping and reprogramming. I want them ready for the new recruits I expect to arrive tomorrow morning. He tilted back in his chair. We will want as many soldiers available as we can manage. It is imperative that the people of Earth be too terrified to even consider fighting back. Chapter 31. Cinder peered out the cockpit window at a crop of leafy plants. The fields stretched out in every direction, the view of the flat horizon broken only by a stone farmhouse nearly a mile away, a house, a lot of vegetables, and a giant spaceship. This isn't conspicuous at all. At least we're in the middle of nowhere, said Thorn, peeling himself out of the pilot seat and sliding on his leather jacket. If anyone calls the police, it will take them a while to get here. Unless they're already on their way, Cinder muttered. Her heart had been drumming throughout their eons-long descent down to Earth, her brain skimming over a thousand different fates that could await them. Though she'd kept up the ridiculous chanting as long as she could, they still had no way of knowing how effective she was being, and she still had the sinking feeling that her attempts to disguise their ship using lunar magic were pathetically futile. She couldn't understand how she could manipulate radars and radio waves with nothing but her own muddled thoughts. Nevertheless, the fact remained that no one had discovered them in space, and so far their luck was holding. Benoit Farms and Gardens appeared to be wholly deserted. The ramp began to lower off the cargo bay, and Eco chirped, "You two go off and have fun now. I'll be sitting here, by myself, all alone, checking for radar interference and running diagnostic. It's going to be fantastic."
"You're getting really good at your sarcasm," said Cinder, joining Thorn at the top of the ramp as it smashed a very fine row of hardy foliage.
Thorn squinted at the glare on his port screen. "Bingo," he said, pointing at the two-story house that had to be old enough to have survived the Fourth World War. "She's here. Bring me back a souvenir," Eco yelled as Thorn stomped down into the field. The ground was soggy from recent watering, and mud clung to the hem of his pants as he cut through the crop, making his own direct route to the house. Cinder followed, drinking in the wide open farmland and the fresh air, so sweet after being locked up inside the Rampian's recycled oxygen. Even with her audio interface turned off, it was the deepest silence she'd ever experienced. "It's so quiet here. Creepy, isn't it? I don't know how people can stand it. I think it's kind of nice."
"Yeah, like a morgue is nice."
A cluster of smaller buildings were thrown haphazardly throughout the fields. A barn, a chicken coop, a shed, a hangar big enough to house a number of hovers or even a spaceship, though not one as big as the Rampian. Cinder drew up short when she spotted it. She frowned, stretching for the gossamer memory that seemed to recognize the hangar. "Wait." Thorn turned back to her. "Did you see someone?" Without answering, she changed direction, squishing through the mud. Thorn trailed after her, silent as Cinder shoved open the hangar door.
"I'm not sure that breaking into Michelle Benoit's outbuildings is the best way to introduce ourselves."
Cinder glanced back, scanning the houses. Empty windows.
"I need to see something," she said, and stepped inside.
"Lights on." The lights flickered to life, and she gasped at the sight before her. Tools and parts, screws and bolts, clothes and grimy shop rags, all flung haphazardly around the space. Every cabinet hung open. Every storage crate and toolbox had been tipped over. The glossy white floor could hardly be seen beneath the mess. On the other side of the hangar, a small delivery ship sat with its back window busted out. Shards of glass glittered beneath the blazing lights. The hangar smelled of spilled fuel and toxic fumes, and a little like Cinder's market booth.
"What a sty," said Thorn, disgusted.
"I'm not sure I can trust a pilot with such little respect for her ship." Cinder ignored him, busy sending her scanner over the shelves and walls. Despite the distraction of the chaos, her brain machine interface was picking up on something, a general impression of familiarity, tinges of a long-lost memory, the way the sun angled in from the door, the confined smell of machinery and manure, the criss-cross pattern of the exposed trusses. She paced across the concrete, crunching through the debris. She moved slowly, lest the ghost of familiarity vanish.
Cinder, said Thorn, glancing back toward the farm. "What are we doing in here?"